Right, colleagues, welcome back. And if we fly through this, we should be loused by 5 o'clock. Item 8.11, Lothian Buses, CEC dividend request. Head of Commercial Operations, Ricky Moffat.
Thanks, Provost. This report comes forward following the Council meeting back in March this year, where Council were made aware of a motion by City of Edinburgh Council seeking an extraordinary dividend of £20 million from Lothian Buses during the period of their next business plan, which covered the years 2017 to 2020. There's been discussions between ourselves, Council Leader, and West Lothian and East Lothian, and it was jointly agreed that Mid Lothian would submit a letter to the City of Edinburgh Council outlining the various concerns. And that letter is appended Appendix 1 to this report. Subsequently, there's been a response from City of Edinburgh Council Leader, and that's included in Appendix 2. So turning to the recommendations, Provost, I'd ask Councillor to note the discussions taking place to date, note the comments previously from Lothian Buses, recently from City of Edinburgh Council, and to agree the Director of Resources will provide a further update when information becomes available.
Thank you, Mr. Moffat. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. I did, as requested, on the 22nd of March at the full council meeting, and we contacted the three other councils. Andrew Burns couldn't attend, but we did meet with the other people, and as Ricky says, the letters are recorded later on, and that his response is that the City of Edinburgh Council shares the same concerns as the rest of us, and they wouldn't have requested this extraordinary dividend if the business case didn't stack up. However, should Lothian Region Transport Board advise anything else, I hope that Andrew Burns and the City of Edinburgh Council abide by what the board does recommend. So, at the minute, I propose that we do accept the recommendations and look forward to having the updates as and when they become available.
Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. It's just to actually ask, Ricky, if has there been a meeting of Lothian Buses, or do you know if one's imminent?
Yeah, just since I've returned from my holidays, I've received an intimation that Lothian Buses want to meet with the minority shareholders in the next week or so. So I would anticipate that at that point there may be an indication of what Lothian Buses' response is likely to be.
Enough. Oh, sorry, Russ Lomley.
Yeah, thanks very much, Provost. I mean, I think we note the actions and, you know, it's fine as it goes. But I have to say that I worry, and I'm sure this council worries, about the future of Lothian Buses if these kind of things are going to come about and the pressure that they're under to keep what is the envy of Scotland and certainly the UK with regard to a publicly owned transportation unit. And I mean, it really is something that I think we all dearly want to keep that way. And I have to say that an extraordinary dividend, and I'm not sure if I've got this right or not, but if Edinburgh take 20 million out, then Lothian Buses would be duty bound to give the other shareholders an extraordinary dividend as well. And I fear that that money, that extraordinary dividend promise, wouldn't actually be enough to keep the bus services that we enjoy in Lothian going, never mind anything else. Lothian Buses is the only bus operator in the UK, outside London that is, that's actually got increased patronage, where others are losing people hand over fist. And we just had the debate about the Borders Rail line, where we've got problems on in Mid Lothian. This exacerbates a situation that wouldn't be of our making. Now, I know Councillor Burns, the leader of Edinburgh Council, has written back that lovely flowery letter to you all, but I have to say I don't actually believe it. A report actually went up to City of Edinburgh in the first place that actioned them approaching Lothian Buses or their board for that extraordinary dividend. Now, I really urge this council not just to note the report, but to actually ask the good offices of Ricky and his team, along with the Cabinet portfolio holder, to make representation to Lothian Buses Board to explain our worry and concern that if this goes ahead, there may not be a bus service in Edinburgh now, in Edinburgh and the Lothians. And you know yourself, Provost, that last year and the year before, first of taken off buses in Midlothian. In fact, there's no, apart from the through buses that come through from the borders, there's no buses at all that first operate from it within Midlothian. And we just saw just over the last few months there that they did the same in East Lothian. So both East Lothian and Midlothian have a part to play in this. And I just think that we should, by all means, note the correspondence, but I do urge this council to actually make representation to the Lothian boards for our case, because I really feel very passionate about it, because it's a service that we all enjoy and we all want to keep. And I'm a little bit frightened that if something goes awry, it'll be a privatised service in the future.
Councillor Constable.
Just to understand, yeah, I couldn't agree more with Councillor Embry. This 20 million, what are they wanting it for? And will that be the end of it? Will it just become a cash cow? Will they bleed it dry? And as we end up with the bus service, which is the envy of the country, and we'll end up with one like Aberdeen, which is terrible.
Yeah, Professor, would be quite clear. I agree with everything Councillor Emily says. I think, quite frankly, here, Edinburgh Council, and the same as every other councils, they're looking at any way whatsoever to raise money to try and deal with the deficits that they're facing. And at this moment in time, they're looking at Lothian buses. We need to be opposing this wholeheartedly. We hope West Lothian and East Lothian councils will agree and come in behind us. We need to be making a position clear to the board that we see this as a threat to a lot of vital services. And I can assure you here that the services that are likely to be hit if Lothian buses start to struggle will be the ones that are hit in Midlothian. We need to be opposing any additional payments other than that's given by the board.
Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with what Councillor Emery has said. And I mean, we know that what's happened in Edinburgh is that they now have a new set-up, an arm's-length company called Transport for Edinburgh. Now, that will include linking up the buses with the trams, and that is a big concern. And bear in mind, they are moving ahead and trying to see if they can extend the tram link down Leith, down the Ocean Terminal, and then Grantham. And that is a worry that's where some of the money will be. They'll be hoping to use the money towards that sort of thing, and that's a concern. And I think we have got to stand up against it, because we have the most, of all the other Lothian councils, the minor shareholders, we have the most services from Lothian buses. There's no Lothian buses going to West Lothian, but where their concern is, they have a lot of employees of Lothian buses in West Lothian, and actually so much so that I think Lothian must put a bus trying to pick them up. And we've now seen that the new company in East Lothian is East Coast Buses, which is an arm's length subsidiary of Lothian Buses. So how it will all pan out. But that's a big concern, and I think, yeah, you're right. So.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. I'd just like to lend my support to what's been said, but also to point out another concern I have. When Transport for Edinburgh was set up, we had a seminar. We were given information on how the companies would be set up with the specific purpose of ensuring that the trams did not bleed the buses. And that was the way it was. Transport for Edinburgh, I understand, was a holding company which then had the two subsidiary companies within it, but there were quite clear boundaries between them. This looks to me like a way of sidestepping that protection for Lothian buses. So I think that we should, in the strongest terms, express our views on this.
Thank you. I'm sure this council will impress on Edinburgh that it's not acceptable to cut the services to Midlothian. Move to item 8.12, page 179, 2016-17 pre-winter update. The Head of Commercial Operations, Mr Moffat.
Thank you, Provost. The purpose of this report essentially is to come forward to advise Council on the revised winter policy, which in essence there's very little change from the last year. But just reflecting on the winter that we've just had, I'm sure members will recall some of the really severe winters we've had in the early part of the decade. Thankfully, last year was an awful lot milder. However, on the other kind of end of that spectrum, it was much wetter. And indeed, it was one of the wettest December periods, for example, that we've had since records began, including a couple of storms, as outlined below. If we look at the graph on page 132, it just shows the significant increase in terms of the precipitation that we've experienced across Scotland, but specifically in Midlothian. I've outlined just exactly what the various priorities for the council are, including both carriageway and footways, and we've also outlined the arrangements that are in place for care for people in emergencies, that's our elderly and our vulnerable, which have worked very well in the past and have been well received. So essentially, I'd like to kind of turn to the recommendations and ask Council to adopt and publish the winter service policy and operational plan for the 16-17 winter season.
Thank you, Mr Moffat. Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Thanks, Mr Moffat, for the pre-winter report. I think we've been fortunate in the last 3 years as regards the weather conditions, but as we can see at the table at 3-1, that you can't really second-guess the weather a lot of the times, and you know, certainly not with any great certainty, even on the same day, never mind 2 or 3 months or 6 months down the road. Midlothian has presently the stock holding capacity of 5,000 tonnes at Fushey Bridge and Butlerfield, and the focus for the Council on this winter service plan will be to keep priority roads such as bus routes and those near hospitals and emergency services open through winter. Specific plans are in place to ensure that the elderly and the vulnerable people of Midlothian are protected. The Council is once again relying on local residents to help out this winter, and residents can support the Council's efforts by clearing footpaths and pavements outside their own homes and neighbours if they're able to do so. And we would also urge all residents to check on the elderly and the vulnerable, and that it's important that the Council is prepared in case we get a winter like the one in 2010-11. We have enough stock on road salt this year, enough to provide a serious defence from the weather, and I can't thank the local residents through their hard work that they do when severe winter strikes, and that's by working together we can keep Midlothian moving.
Councillor Dimery.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. I mean, welcome the report in that it is, and it's about collaboration and consultation that I think Councillor Rosie just alluded to at that end part of his contribution. And that is to say that, I mean, the one good thing that came out of that winter of 2010-11 was in actual fact we saw that we had a plan that wasn't fit for purpose, in the sense that what our priorities were fine, but when you got below that, we needed communities to engage with us, and we put out a report that went round our communities in consultation exercise, and they came back, as I'm sure elected members might be able to come back and say, though, there are certain areas that I've missed out, or certain areas you should amend. And I would just like to see this going out round our communities so that we are sure that, one, we've still got people out there that want to help, and two, that we put it pass it by them so that they can either alert us to an omission, an amendment, or something that's actually changed, because if we don't do that, then what we're doing is the council's endorsing a policy, and then when you get the first phone call as an elected member or indeed as an officer, and officers are good, oh, the council agreed that, the council's in a different position altogether where they actually have to start trying to explain that the report that went up was right and proper at the time, etc., etc. But nevertheless, I'm making light of that, but the serious side of that is about engaging with our communities. And I would just like to see this report, good though it is, and I'm not taking anything away from that, but I'd certainly like to see this report going out to our communities for a quick turnaround, but get the basic parts of it either endorsed or indeed suggest amendments. And I would hope that the council can agree to at least going through that exercise. We talk about our communities in here all the time. Here's an opportunity to show what we mean.
Councillor Young.
Thanks, Provost. I would second what Councillor Imrie has said about it being a good report that would benefit from a consultation stage. I mean, just thinking about 3.2, which is the risk section, on page 185, the fifth paragraph down, is about reputation and public expectations. And I think that elected members will be familiar with the quite high level of public expectation over street treatment in bad weather. And I think part of it is probably high expectations, but I also think that maybe part of it is a lack of clarity among our residents about how we as a council decide how to allocate those resources. And I think that there's also sometimes a bit of misinformation. Streets and so-and-so all get done and none of our streets get touched. And, when people are frustrated, it's quite difficult to try and explain. That's not really the case, particularly when the process is ongoing and it might just be that the resources haven't quite gotten up there. So I think consultation would probably help with making people heard. But I also think, reflecting on the area that I represent, there are some communities, particularly of higher altitude, Mayfield East Houses, but then also Path Head and beyond, where partly because of the conditions and the lying snow through altitude, but also partly just because of the hilly roads, that there's particularly tough problems. And it's fine for people to report those back to elected members and then to feed them back. But if there was a consultation process where community councils and residents could highlight those, I think it would probably have a practical benefit, but also a reputational benefit so that people felt bought in to the strategy.
Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks, Provost. Just for a point for Ricky. Presumably the plan will be going ahead if there was severe weather in the next week or two, even though if it does go for consultation, if that's what we decide. But the one I was wanting to ask about was on page 205, under social care facilities. It was Arran House. That's normally one we would have to phone up to see about getting it cleared. I think what the arrangement would be, I'd be happy if this was what we decide, or what you can actually do, is when they're clearing bees like school, if they're just going in the Arran House at the same time, because they need access for ambulances and doctors. And if they're doing it at the same time as a school, I'd be quite comfortable with that, if that could be the arrangement.
Councillor Pottinger.
Yeah, just briefly, just when you talk about the wettest December we've ever had, I think what we're heading for is more wetness, increasing wetness and increasing flooding issues. And winter maintenance shouldn't just be about snow removal, it should be dealing with flooding issues as well.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, I too remember vividly the winter of 2010. I remember a meeting here in November where the forecast was in. We didn't really believe it at the time. But I do remember, I think it was Ricky, talking about this coming up. And sure enough, the St Andrews Night celebrations were all cancelled in Edinburgh because we're up to our necks in snow. I'm very happy with this plan. I'd like to see it disseminated out so people know they can't expect one into their road just at the drop of a hat. Speaking as an elderly person who lives in a very steep hill, I get great comfort from this report, and certainly we have had geographical considerations for the very steep hills.
Mr. Moffat.
Thanks, Provost. Just one thing to come back on. It's just to make members aware that I was going to use the term kind of live and breathe. There are officers within this chamber today who virtually live and breathe winter during the period kind of October through to March, the hours that they put in. But the document itself is a living, breathing document, and it's subject to change. And it's subject to change from elected members, but our communities as well, because they live in the communities, they're aware and appreciate where the problems are. So in terms of amendments, that's something that's a continual and a constant process. What I would also say, the plans, where we treat and in what areas and kind of the priorities are available online as well. So they're kind of there as part of that living, breathing document. But I'll take on board, if Council's happy to agree that, the consultation. More than happy to write to the communities and include elected members in that so that they're aware of our relative priorities, and it'll give them a further opportunity to kind of reflect on what we do and can come forward with any proposed changes that they might like us to consider.
Councillor Devink.
Could I just use this opportunity to really congratulate Ricky's department, because during the winter we live probably in the most furthest away part of Midlothian, and we have grids placed in the road up towards our farm and the neighbouring farm, and that is a real wonderful service, because we get that, the farmer spreads it in the morning, and there are no accidents as a result of it, and that is being done in cooperation with the rural community, and great credit to Midlothian for doing that, because we need to work much more with local communities. Kenny was talking earlier about Mayfield and Path Head. That's also part of my ward. And if we could do more of that, where we could work together with those communities, then we could make it that much easier. So I really would encourage Midlothian to do more of that. It's a very cheap way of other people helping us, providing with the spreading of the salt and keeping the accidents low. Thank you.
Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, if we could just maybe move that we accept a report with the proviso that Ricky is going to write out to the communities, community councils and whatever.
Council happy to accept that report and that proviso. Thank you. Item 8.13, page 209. Update on implementation of the self-directed support in Midlothian. The Joint Director of Health and Social Care, Evelyn McHugh.
Thank you, Provost. The purpose of this report is to update Council on the implementation of self-directed support in Midlothian. Sections 2.1 and 2.2 of the report set out the ambitions of the legislation, and which is really to give people who receive services more choice about how they receive that care, and also to ensure that we move to a much more outcome-focused approach in how we plan and deliver care services. Section 3 sets out Midlothian's approach to planning for the implementation, and in particular references the significant role of service users, family carers and voluntary sector in planning with us around the implementation of the changes. Section 4 sets out our current implementation plan. Our challenge going forward is really to ensure that the values and ethos of self-directed support is embedded across all of our services, and we continue to build on the progress that we've made to date. The legislation, section 5.3 and 5.4, explains that the legislation also introduced changes to charging for services for carers, and Midlothian has sought to implement that in partnership with Focal locally. Those changes will be further updated with the implementation of the new carers legislation that's due for implementation in 2017. Members are asked to consider the recommendation in Section 8.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. We are changing the way we're providing services, and the best way to do that is by finding out really what people's aspirations are and how they would like to live, and work alongside them to try and meet that desire. So we are changing how we offer help and support along with one of our main partners, NHS Lothian. But I know this won't be a quick change, and it won't be easy because we're two large organisations who work and manage our affairs differently. So the best thing we can do is to keep working with our staff and keep our focus on the outcomes for these people. So to this end, I propose we accept these recommendations. But further than that, I think it's really important that we continue to do that and to keep supporting carers, because they're vitally important for us and we need to keep them on side. They're a big asset to us and looking forward to the way we do our business, and we must value them. Thank you.
Mr. Lord Constable.
Thank you. Yes, happy to second these recommendations. I'd actually like to refer you to page 209, section 2.1 of the report. It's the options. It's the freedom of choice that to give people. Do they want to arrange it themselves? Do they want us to arrange it? And so on. And in particular, I really like option 4, because you've got the three options. And then option 4 may be a mixture of these things. So this is where the person can take responsibility for it and get support in this and direct what will suit them, I think is really a very important aspect of the whole thing.
Council accept that report. Thank you. Item 8.14, new social housing progress report, phase 2 and phase 3, Head of Property and Facilities Management.
Thanks, Provost. Natural reaction to that. This progress report aims to obtain approval for the next steps in the procurement of phase 2 and phase 3 of the council house building programme. We're currently in phase 2. There's 267 units are committed or completed, with a further 155 proposed for completion. The sites being considered or indeed rejected for both the remainder of phase 2 and 3 are highlighted in tables 1 and 2 of this report. In order to maximise the value of the current construction framework, which was procured prior to the rising market that we've seen recently, it's proposed that we extend the framework by 1 year, and that would take us from July 2017 through to July 2018. We also intend to maximise the framework and increase the value that we are able under the procurement rules by about £5 million. And this will allow the remainder of Phase 2 and the start of Phase 3 to benefit from the existing framework rates. The remainder of Phase 3 would be tendered in groups to maximise the best value using the current housing designs that we have, and site investigations for the proposed sites are programmed to commence to avoid environmental delays in the future. The programme for these proposals are set out in Sections 3.2 of the report, and the recommendations are set out in Section 6 of the report. Thanks, Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Sherritt. Councillor Parry.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Provost. It's really welcoming to see these developments and phase 2 and 3 coming forward. Making sure that everybody has a safe, warm and affordable home is central to this administration's drive. And actually, I thank everybody around this table's drive to make the county fairer and more prosperous. It's good to see us on track, build a new generation of council housing for the future, and also to take steps to safeguard social housing by abolishing the right to buy as well. So all in all, really positive from my perspective. I'm happy to move the recommendations on page 222.
Thank you. Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Just to second Councillor Paddy on the recommendations, and it's good to see that the Council are proceeding with best value, working within the procurement framework, and it's important that we continue as quickly as possible with the social housework, social housing building programme.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks. Just a question, Gary. I know we may be treating this separately for the normal build process, but where does New Byers Crescent rebuild? feature in terms of our plans for the future, because obviously we've got service sites there waiting to be redeveloped, and we obviously are looking to have a sort of rubble site for too long in the centre of the town.
As stated in 2.1 within the report, 75 units for the replacement housing still falls within phase two of the programme. So it's imminent. What we're going through just now is extensive site investigations, more than you would expect because of the history to the site.
Councillor Russell.
Thanks, Provost. While I do welcome more council housing, I'm totally surprised and astonished that we should be welcoming the amount of houses that's been in this document. For my own area, representing the Dalkeith ward, the plans for New Mills Road, the former Dalkeith High School site, we, this council, is only allocating 35 spaces for our people, with a waiting list of 2,282 on all the lists in the Dalkeith area. And I understand that obviously the land looks as though it's going to be sold on to other providers, be it private or housing associations, whose rents are obviously higher than our own rents. I'd really like this revisited, because the size of that area, it's a huge site, and we, this council, is only going to put 35 houses on it. I am totally astounded, and I would really like this to be revisited.
The 35 capacity for that site is not the full site, obviously. The 35 has been worked up in conjunction with our housing colleagues and our planning colleagues, and looked at the master planning for the site. Now, it's at early stages, and it's an estimate of what that would look like if we separated the site into private housing association and council housing. So it's an estimate at this time. That can go up and it can go down, but it'll be developed in phase three as we move forward.
Councillor Montgomery.
Thanks again, Provost. It's regarding the two sites in Penicuik on page 219. There's site number 111 and site number 47, I think it is, aye. the two sites, I mean, when we got the presentation about the council house building, there's a suggestion that they may be putting in veteran houses in the Eastfield Farm site. I'd have to say, if they're going to be doing that, the Kirkhill Road site would be a far better site, because it's adjacent to bus stops, and it also backs onto the British Legion, which they would actually be able to get a bit of support, because that's obviously one of their roles to play. I mean, Eastfield Farm site is in an industrial area, although it's on the edge of it, I understand that. But if that was swapped over in terms, if we're going to do the retirement, the former servicemen's houses or service people houses, the Eastfield Farm site, in terms of council houses, has got the school next to it, it's got the doctor's surgery, it's on the road to Beeslack School, and also it's access for the main road for more able-bodied people. But the Kirkhill Road site would certainly be a better site in terms of if we're actually going to be doing former army houses. They've all got bus passes, they've got access to the bus stops are actually right next to the place, right next to the site, and as I said, they've got the British Legion out there who would actually provide a bit of support for any of the people that are in there. So I just ask if that would be something that we could consider if we're going to be doing, as I say, former army personnel.
Take that into consideration, Adam. Yeah.
Councillor Bennett.
Thanks, Provost. Gary, it's regarding the table on page 219, right at the bottom. Now, the paper's based on council houses. Down at the bottom, it's got affordable houses, an example, Shawfair, which is actually in Dandenong, because that's the area that shows on the map. But they've got approximately 47 houses. Are we talking about council houses, or is it what you call them, the private
affordable
houses through the I know we're allocated so many of the houses, but is it the intention that there'll be the council that control them? I know we handed it to, like, say, Melville Houston or something like that.
Yeah, this paper doesn't relate to any other than council housing programmes, so it's council houses we're talking about in this report.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Yeah, I'd just like to get a bit more information on other social housing, like Melville Housing, particularly because we share a waiting list with them. And I know that's out of the scope of this, but it'd be interesting to know what kind of plans other social housing providers have in Midlothian, if you have that information.
I don't have that information, but possibly our planning colleagues and our housing colleagues would be able to answer that.
Councillor Devink.
Could maybe Ian Johnson explain how our policy has changed and that today, when a developer wants to build houses, we insist on at least 25% of affordable housing? And is that also part of what Gary is talking about just now, Gary Sherrod?
The policy in the current local plan and then the policy in the emerging local development plan is that on allocated sites, a provision for 25% of the units come forward to be affordable. That definition of affordability is quite wide, but it can include social rented, and it can include in some instances a higher rented property if in fact there is the demand for that and it meets a particular affordable housing need. In terms of to separate out, that's a requirement upon private developers, so they would need to meet that requirement, and more often than not it tends to be housing associations that they have on board to take up that that requirement. The council's social housing programme is separate to that. So it's over and above what we'd be seeking to get from the private sector on allocated sites.
Councillor Milligan.
Yeah, Provost. I think while I welcome the report, I mean, it is quite disappointing that we've got as low numbers actually finished now. When you take, for example, some of the sites in Phase 2 were actually started away back in 2012. Woodburn Court, Eastfield Drive, Cowan Court and that were all started there. We seem to have slowed down quite considerably here. That would be less than about 190 houses completed in the last 4 or 5 years. We've also moved in today in the third phase, which is some time back, and this seems to have slowed right down, Gary, for some reason. And again, that there are different areas trying to get decent prices on this and to try and force costs down. But I think we really need to be looking at how we can try and speed this up a bit and start running at this, because we'll have a major problem. I would suspect, like most councillors round here, the biggest casebook I have is people coming because they've not got a house, they're in private rent, being charged extortionate and rates to stay in them, and people just looking for certainty. And I think we need to also, as a council, be sitting down again and thinking, well, what's the next step? Once we've got Phase 3, or should we wait till Phase 3 is over? Because the reality is, at the end of this council and facing the next council, the biggest problem we're going to have is actually what do we do next about social housing, because we will not have the levers that we've had now to continue to put the rents up, because they're starting to get to a stage where folk are not wanting off any further because they become quite stressful for people on low incomes to pay. Where do we go to next? I think we need to actually be sitting down. The government grant, as I understand it, has got substantially better for the briefing that we got. So therefore, is there another alternative way that we could be working in partnership with some of the private developers? Councillor Devink quite rightly asked the question, you know, does this include the 25% affordable housing? You can see the area Dander Hodds included in here. What I'm really surprised at, as with all the other development that's going to go ahead, is why are there no other areas and Midlothian having to gear up sites. For example, in Bonnerig in the Hopefield development, we got three sites out of the Hopefield development when there was only a requirement to deliver 5%. So we should actually be linking together. We were planning colleagues to be saying to them, well, you know, when you're bringing these sites forward, didn't you just call them affordable? Can some of these areas be used as social housing? Because if I'm right in saying, and Gary can correct me, a lot of these sites come already serviced, which saves the council considerable amounts of money. So I would like to see something coming forward for us to sit down and say, well, where do we go from here now with social housing? Because the problem's not getting less, it's getting worse.
Yeah, I take on board everything that Councillor Mulligan has just said. In terms of the speed, we had a period where environmental studies were changing, the standards were changing, and the likes of asbestos interrogation on each site was the standards in which we had to take the investigation to were a different level. That disrupted our programme for some periods of time. However, the comments about speeding that programme up are heard, and we will have to do that. In terms of the next steps, Stephen has just joined us from Housing, and I think it is right that we bring something back in terms of looking beyond Phase 3 once we have that discussion between Housing and ourselves, including the developer's contribution towards affordable housing within Midlothian, not just council housing.
Thanks. If I just comment on that, just to note that in the last few years in Midlothian, only two of the other social housing providers in Midlothian have had a development programme. I'm currently working to develop the next five-year plan, the next strategic housing investment plan for the council. And at the moment, the five providers are looking to develop in Midlothian, and one of the local housing associations, Melville Housing Association, which has not developed many units in the last few years, now looking to do in the region of 200 in the next few years. So local housing associations are increasing development. There's also more grant funding available, which should give the council some comfort that we may be able to have a further phase beyond Phase 3 as well, obviously taking into account the affordability of local rents. And we're also looking at the issue of going onwards in terms of the increasing housing need. There's various different ways to look at that. There's various subsidy-free approaches that we've been looking at. There's an organisation called Local Authority Rent Trust that's working on subsidy-free development and looking for sites in Midlothian. Some of the frustrations for myself is that there can be quite a delay in getting access to the affordable housing policy sites. You know, if we were to wait for more of those to come up, it would be waiting a very long time to get development. And obviously, Housing and Gary's team are impatient to get on and develop where we can on the sites we have access to.
Okay, colleagues, I think we've kicked the ball about the park for a wee while on that one. Happy to accept the recommendations on that report. Thank you. We move to item 8.16, Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, the Director of Education, Communities and Economy, Dr Smith.
To update the Council on the progress made in preparing for the inquiry and to raise members' awareness of the possible financial and staffing implications as the inquiry moves forward. Section 2.1 to 2.4 sets out the terms of the inquiry and has set the term living memory, which can go back as much as 100 years. Section 2.5 is important in that the Scottish Government is proposing to move the three-year limitation for civil actions for survivors of historical abuse. Section 2.6 outlines the work we have done to date in Midlothian and the work required as we move forward. This will require a small dedicated team to undertake the key tasks and will include support from legal team, social work team, information governance, social work records management team, admin team, communications, web team, etc. Section 3 outlines the findings from the Jersey inquiry, and this is important for us because it highlights that the inquiry in Jersey, which is much smaller than the Scottish inquiry, took longer than anticipated, was four times the budget was more, four times more than expected, that support was required for victim witnesses and also staff that were involved, past and present, And the one area that the Jersey report highlighted was media involvement and the impact that had on both past and current provision. Section 4 highlights that the possible cost to the Council from claimants who were victims of abuse and the unknowns from this inquiry. Section 6 summarises that in Midlothian we've made significant progress in preparing for the inquiry, that we have identified a staffing budget and that we're using the experience from the Jersey inquiry to support our work, and that we estimate that there may be claims against the Council. Above all, that we support actions to remove barriers to the victims of historical child abuse. And the recommendations are as set out in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Moving the recommendations, I'd ask you to note the first recommendation, A, the significant work already carried out in Midlothian, summarised in paragraph 6.1 of the report. I just congratulate the media that we are in this position, and I'd just like to move the recommendations.
Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. This is really serious, and it's not just a financial cost, but there's lots of hidden costs to our resources and mainly to the people who've been affected directly and indirectly, and how it's affected their lives and their families' lives. And there's a bit of me concerned about the legal costs being more than what we would pay out to people, and I think that would send an awful bad message. So I think we have to be canny with our costs and make sure we concentrate on people's lives who've been affected and not our pocket, if you like, on this occasion. So maybe that's why we should be very canny with our reserves. I too agree that we accept the recommendations.
Council happy to accept the recommendations in this report. Thank you. 8.17, the proposed development of a play strategy for Midlothian, Director of Education, Communities and Economy, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Provost. This report highlights that Midlothian Council has developed a play strategy and action plan in line with the Scottish Government's requirements 2013. The report you have before you is both ambitious and exciting in that we as a local authority are committed to providing a wide range of play opportunities for our children and young people. The strategy in the appendices highlights 5 themes for play in Midlothian. Play aware, that we understand play. Play and risk, getting the right balance of play and risk. Play and learn, the way our children learn through play. Play opportunities, play for all, and play planning. The strategy encompasses these 6 themes, then sets out an ambitious action plan which includes all areas and partners within the community. The report before you highlights the processes that the working group has gone through to get to this point and how the activities in the action plan will be reported formally. Section 5, the recommendations as set out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Constable.
Members will record in the briefing we had this morning, and I was very pleased to see being so well attended by so many members. We had a very useful briefing this morning on the importance of play. We're going to form a Midlothian Play Forum, which will liaise with the Midlothian Association of Play, and that will be launched on November the 19th. It is a vitally in the development of the children that play does take place, and as it was explained this morning, so I'll not go over all that thing. It did ask for us to look for a Midlothian play champion amongst our membership here. Well, I thought maybe I would be doing that, but I'm very happy to propose Councillor Johnson for this, for she volunteered for this, and I think she'd be an excellent play champion.
Thank you. Reverend Talley.
Thank you, Provost. In 1999, the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland instructed its Education Committee to urge local authorities to continue to make schools generally and easily available as a community resource. Over recent years, the General Assembly has welcomed the assurance that local authorities are taking steps to ensure that schools are made available as a community resource, and has noted the importance of a school ethos which promotes the all-round growth and development of young people. The Church of Scotland also notes the contribution which local churches make in offering community space. In my own local church in Pennycook, the moderator of the General Assembly will be officially opening a new godly play facility on Thursday of this week. So it is in this context, Provost, that I'd like to thank the officers who have prepared the report on a proposed play strategy and action plan for Midlothian, which is before us this afternoon, and commend the Council for receiving it.
Thank you. Councillor Rosie.
Thanks, Provost. Councillor Constable's proposal. And it was a great seminar this morning, and I think what did come out of it was a feeling, I think, for everyone that the schools should play an important part in it and be open. Some are doing it already, and I think the feeling was that we should be moving towards more doing that. So, yeah, it's a bit second in proposal.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, I just want to add my tuppence worth in as well. I thought it was an excellent seminar this morning. I think play for children, unsupervised play, is really important in a sense because it's helping children to develop the soft skills which they're going to need to develop in order to cope with the modern world. You know, that's the way we as human beings learn. And we've got to do everything we can to ensure that children don't spend their childhood in front of a screen playing computer games or just simply watching TV. We've got to interact, develop the social skills, interpersonal skills, which will serve them well in later life.
OK, I have one nomination for the play champion. Any other nominations? OK, Councillor Johnson, you are the playtime champion. Item 8.18, additional essential works at Pentland House in Pennycook, the Head of Customers and Housing Services. Stephen Clark.
Thanks, I'll speak to this, Provost. This report provides information on unforeseen essential works that are required as part of the refurbishment of Pentland House in Pennycook. Members will be aware of the Cabinet report in November 2014, which approved the use of this former care home for temporary accommodation for homeless households. And in order to make use of this building, we need to do some refurbishments in order to comply with HMO legislation. Section 2.2 and 2.3 detail the scope of works that we sought governance for back in the original report. Section 2.4 to 2.7 explains that during the process of removing asbestos from the building, a layer of polystyrene has been found in the ceilings. This was fitted during the building's construction, and our concern is that in the event of a fire, polystyrene could emit toxic gases which could be harmful to the building occupants. So section 2.8 indicates the options available to remedy this. Option 1 would be to do nothing because it still complies with building standards. Option 2 would be to cover the ceilings with a fire-retardant plasterboard. Option 3 would be to entirely remove the Artex and polystyrene from the ceilings, reframe ceilings and insulate the underside of the concrete floors. There's a full breakdown of the costs in the appendix to this report. Section 3 details the costs for these options, with option 3 being the most expensive at £138,000. We do not have governance for this additional level of governance, but we do have enough money in the HRA reserves to meet this cost. Section 4 indicates that to avoid any risk to the building occupants, we're recommending that option 3 is the preferred option. Therefore, in section 5, we're recommending the Council approves option 3 as the most effective and safe option for the future occupants. Thanks, Provost.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Councillor Parry.
Hey, thanks, Chair. I'm happy to move forward to the paper and the recommendations of option 3. I think if it was a private landlord, we'd be saying the exact same thing. We've got a duty of care responsibility as landlords ourselves, so I'm happy to move that forward.
Councillor Rosie.
Thank you. Just one question as regards. I will second this, and I think the option 3 has got to be the one that we go with, because 1 and 2 I think are too great a risk, which I don't think we should be taking. But can I ask about the obviously people will say, well, quite a cost involved here. We're going with option 3. How does that compare against what we're actually paying out in bed and breakfast charges at the moment? Would you be able to
Sure. Currently, we're spending an estimated £1.1 million a year on bed and breakfast accommodation. Generally, every night in Midlothian, around 80 bed spaces are taken up for bed and breakfast accommodation. We estimate there'll be a significant saving. I think we're estimating the total cost for bed and breakfast accommodation after the use of this building and the former Midfield Young People Centre will be open will be about £472,000. So over a reduction of over 50%.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. Just a question on option three. Would the replacing of the insulation be with a higher grade insulation, therefore there might be some cost savings in a reduction in energy?
I don't have the technical knowledge on that one, but I do have my colleague who is the building surveyor for that site, who may be able to comment on that, Mr. Ian McInnes.
With regards to the insulation, the existing insulation, it was fitted back 40 years ago to alleviate heat dissipation down the way from the underside of the floor slab. So the idea is to put new insulation back in, which would be slightly thinner, super efficient. It's considerably more expensive, but in terms of its efficiency, it's far greater. So the idea would be to replace it with best of product as we can to future-proof the building.
Council happy to accept option. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. As a former homeless worker, I know the value of living in your own neighbourhood is vital, and I think the sooner we can get this done, the better. Living in your own environment, near your friends, your family, your networks of support is really good, and the long-term effects of homelessness are really bad, not just for the person who's homeless, but also for their extended family, and it has a knock-on effect on many aspects of people's life. So I hope it's a quick turnaround for the build and we can get people out of bed and breakfast and into this facility as soon as possible.
Is Council happy to accept option three on this report? Thank you. Item 8.19, the consultation on a child poverty bill for Scotland, Director of Education, Communities and Economy, Dr. Smith.
Thank you, Provost. This report sets out Midlothian Council's proposed response to the Scottish Government's consultation on a child poverty bill for Scotland. Sections 2.1 to 2.5 set out the background to the consultation, and Section 7 sets out the recommendations and asks Council to approve our response as set out in the appendix. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Councillor Constable.
Yes, I'll be happy to remove these recommendations. Just quite shameful that the UK Government should try and repeal this Act. And you noted that in 2.3, it highlights serious concern from the United UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. We know the UK comes well down the list of places for the best places in the world to bring up a child, and it is something that we are rightly concerned with. We have to welcome the Scottish Government reinstating, requesting an opt-out from this and to reinstate this bill. And it is a major thing, ridiculous that a child in a nation of ours with such rich resources have such a level of child poverty. We're not a third world country and we should not be having these levels of child poverty. In the moving the recommendations, I'd like to amend recommendation one slightly, and it is recommended that the Council notes, I would rather change that to, it's recommended that the Council welcomes the Scottish Government's proposals to develop a child poverty bill for Scotland, and so on. Just with that slight amendment, I'd like to move these proposals.
Councillor Pottinger.
Yeah, conscious of the time, and I know everybody in this Council is committed to tackling poverty and tackling the poverty gap, and the need to eradicate child poverty in particular, and the need for a child poverty bill for Scotland. And just the slight amendment then would be, yes, we welcome the government's intent. I would remove the word ambition from a lot of this report and put the word intent in there, because I think it adds to the real meaning of having a child poverty bill for Scotland.
Councillor Johnson.
I think Midlothian Council is to be congratulated for taking this positive view, and the fact that we have already committed to paying the living wage to our employees to help prevent child poverty, and the free school meals that we have provided for our children, and also that the school meals that children have to pay for here is welcome as well, and we're about the average in Scotland for that. This council is doing lots of work to eradicate child poverty, and I second Bob's amendment as well. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a seconder for Councillor Pottinger's amendment to remove the word ambition and replace it with intent.
I don't see ambition.
Sorry, could you just have a statement of Councillor Pottinger's?
Sorry, not to repeat myself, I'm conscious of the time, but you know, the word's been put into the document about the ambition. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things we can do intentionally rather than just have an ambition. And if we had the word intent in this reply more so than just the word ambition, I think it would give it more purposeful a meaning. There's a lot of issues where we can attend to, and we do intend. And we do contribute to eradicating poverty, and it's not just the people on benefits. There's the working poor as well, you know. And I'm very conscious of the increasing in the poverty gap throughout. And I think, you know, if we just it would strengthen our reply if we had more the intent to do it or the commitment to do it. But I've moved the word intent.
Councillor Parry.
Provost, can I just, I'm sure Mary will correct me if I'm wrong, but this is our response to the consultation, and the questions, which has the word ambition, is the consultation questions which we can't change. Our response is the part that's underneath. Am I correct?
Okay. Then we're happy to accept the report as amended by Councillor Constable, for he changes it to welcomes. Okay, councillors, it's been a long afternoon. Thank you for your attendance. We are loused.